You're listening to a recorded talk from Greenbelt Festival.
I'm Karen, and behind me I have Hannah and John, who will talk to you about Whispers of Peace, and they will introduce themselves to you.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is John. I have the privilege of working for the Fellowship of Reconciliation, faith-inspired ecumenical peace, justice and nonviolence movement, founded in 1914, when, among other things, a German and an Englishman shook hands, said, "We're one in Christ and we'll never be at war," and ever since has kept a faith-shaped vision of peace and nonviolence alive. It's a real privilege to be here, partly because George MacLeod, who I think has something to do with the Iona community, was at least an honorary president and wrote quite a bit for FOR at different moments, exploring attitudes to peace.
Hi everyone, I'm Hannah Brockway-Mack and I work for the Quakers. My job title, dauntingly, is Peace Lead. It's really nice to be here with you today. My fun fact about me is that I got here about 2 hours ago, and I'm leaving in about 2 hours, so I'm looking forward to this. Karen said that we're going to be talking to you. We are definitely going to be doing a bit of that at the start, but we're also going to be getting you to talk to each other, so I hope you're come ready to do that. We wanted to say that we know there's a lot going on this afternoon, as there always is at Greenbelt. I can hear some of the beer and hymns happening right now. We're going to finish with a song, so you won't be completely free of singing.
There isn't any beer in the tent, though. You'll need to supply your own, and it's too late to go and get it. Maybe Iona could have some whiskey, though. Keep going.
So our workshop today, we wanted to ask, in a world where militarism is increasingly hard to ignore, what can the faith-shaped peacemaker do? We face multiple challenges, and we're going to be talking a bit about those. And hopefully this workshop will help you start thinking about what that can be for you, what you can do in this moment. One thing I should say before I forget is that one of the ways John and I know each other is from a group called the Network of Christian Peace Organizations. And if you don't know what that is, please come and talk to me. In fact, this is an interesting question. Have you ever heard of the Network of Christian Peacemaking Organizations before, friends?
Oh, we've got a tentative hand.
Thank you, Joe.
With a hand wave.
Lovely. Well, we can
Can I pitch in a different question? Did anyone go... Oh, no. Put your hand up if you went to Greenbelt when it was in Cheltenham. Keep your hand up if you went into the big marquee that had loads of stalls in it. Okay? Anyone ever remember going to the Peace Zone within that? Yeah, there's at least one hand. You also then encountered the Network of Christian Peace Organizations. I'll be honest, I was kind of expecting a few more hands up. So, you know, that fell flat on its face. Back to you, Hannah. Okay. Go for it.
I was just going to say a little bit about what we're going to do together in the next... I was going to say 50 minutes. We're probably almost at 45 now. We're going to think a little bit about the world as it is. We're going to spend some time thinking about militarism, which I will define rather than keeping on using this jargony term, in the world around us. Then we're going to use some passages from Scripture, thank you to those of you who have access to Bibles, to think about what they might say to us about what we're called to do. And as I said, we're going to finish with a song. I want to say that I recognise that we're all coming to this tent today, A, probably tired, but B, with lots of different experiences of talking about war and peace, and we're here to listen to each other. So, I hope that is what we're here to do. I know that I've got a microphone, we have microphones, but I always prefer to use the hands up when we go quiet. So we're just going to have a practice at that. Some of you have probably seen it in school, in scouts, in church, whatever you do. But the idea is when you see someone sticking their hand up, please stick your hand up too and be quiet. So we're going to have a practice, friends. Please turn to your neighbour and tell them what you had, if anything, for breakfast. Beautiful. Thank you so much. You can finish that sentence in a second when you've remembered what it is. So friends, we start in this workshop and we wanted to begin with where we are now. What's it like to be in the world right now? You've probably already had time thinking about this weekend. When I thought about this, and this was a couple of weeks ago, the words that came to me were scary, unsettling, hot, but also fun. I have a toddler. And connected. So I'd like you to turn to that same neighbour or somebody else if you didn't have one before. And in five words, say to that person, friend, what is the world like now? Five words. Thank you. John, I was going to say comes armed, but he has a pen. And I wondered if you would like to, anyone would like to shout out one of their words to me and I'll repeat it. Yes.
Discombobulated.
Anybody else?
Colourful.
Colourful. Thank you.
Thrawn. Thrawn. T-H-R-A-W-N.
Thrawn. And colourful.
Would you like to refer us to Dictionary Corner?
Yeah,
what does it mean?
It's Scots for determined. Belligerent.
Thank you. So we had a definition of that as belligerent and determined. Yeah. Appalled. Thank you. Yeah.
Conflicted.
Conflicted. Yeah. Divided. Can I have two more? Thank you. Changing. Thank you. Connected. You can have one more word. Noisy. Thank you. Thank you, John. I'm just going to read them back to us. Colourful, discombobulated, noisy, thrawn, appalled, connected, changing, divided. Thank you. That paints quite a picture. I'm going to say a few things that I think those of us who are interested in a Christian nonviolent perspective might think when we look at government policy now and the world now. And it kind of builds very much on what we've heard already. Some of these things will be really familiar and other things you'll be able to add. So our world can feel like a really violent place, and that is some of what I'm going to be talking about, but I want to remind us that there are beautiful acts of love and compassion and beauty everywhere and in all places. But I'm going to be thinking about the challenges first, and then give hopefully a really beautiful example of solidarity at the end. So this might seem obvious, but I think it bears repeating because this is not inevitable that there are wars going on around us. And these wars, compared to the last 20 years, increasingly impact civilians. We could talk about Palestine, Gaza, Myanmar, Ukraine, Sudan, etc. And maybe you have been having those conversations this weekend already. While on the one hand, war is not a respecter of status, it also affects different people very differently. So women, poor people, disabled people who are less able to flee. These people are often worse off in armed conflict as they are in life. War, I think, is happening in really new and also really old and familiar ways. So we could think about the new frontiers. We could think about AI in weaponry and decisions giving members of the military a couple of seconds to make life and death decisions. We could talk about the military use of space and the Arctic, where it's possible when it hasn't been before. We could talk about really old school rivalries of state powers clashing, the myth of blocs, China, Russia, the USA. But we know, of course, that all the world's citizens have much in common, despite the fact we live in a very unequal world. As always, there are a small number of people with power, mostly men, who can take decisions which shape and indeed take the lives of thousands of people they have never met. I think this is really obvious, but I want to repeat it because once again, it's not inevitable. There are newer challenges. Climate breakdown. We could spend the whole weekend talking about that. The breaking down of an international order which, for better or worse, we have gotten used to over the last 80 years. And the stifling of dissent from populist governments and our own. Another part of that, and we heard that in these words that were spoken, is connection. So connection can provide us with beautiful moments of solidarity, but it also means that we can see slaughter. We can see the destruction of people, the planet, in front of our eyes, on our smartphones, on our tellies, day on, day in, day out. I think those with power are finding really familiar and traditional and safe for them answers to instability that we are facing. So as we know, there are massively increased military spending targets. Arms sales are skyrocketing. And right-wing nationalism is attempting to keep out those who've had to flee because of war. The UK government response. If any of you have had the joy of reading the National Security Strategy or the Strategic Defence Review last summer, which is something we do for our jobs, you will know that as well as the massive military spending hikes that are in line with NATO targets, frequently facilitated by cutting of overseas aid, not just in the UK, but elsewhere as well, you will see that the UK government wanted a whole-of-society approach to war preparedness. So since last summer, you've seen initiatives like the Defence Universities Alliance, which is a group of 20 universities in England and Scotland that have agreed to have really close links with arms companies and the MOD. If you're interested in that, have a look at Demilitarised Education, or DED, which is one of the organisations that's trying to counter it. Or you could think about the gap year in the military that you can now take. That Strategic Defence Review last year promised to increase the lethality, that's not a word I'm familiar with, but that's what they said, the lethalness of the armed forces tenfold. Of course, they continue to facilitate arms sales to countries like Israel, the UAE, Saudi Arabia, etc., etc. And there was an unquestioning embracing of AI for military use. All right, friends, breathe. That's some of the difficult stuff that we have to look at. I want to tell you about a really beautiful example of solidarity. This workshop is called Whispers of Peace, and this is a shout for peace. Many of you may have heard of the emergency response rooms, which are in Sudan. They are volunteer-led groups. There are 26,000 volunteers across 18 states in 700 emergency response rooms in Sudan, and they provide shelter, humanitarian aid, medical assistance, food to people who need it. These are doing an incredible job, and they are seen as direct inheritors of the kind of neighbourhood resistance groups that in villages in 2018 were getting together to push against the regime. So they moved beautifully from kind of local resistance groups to mutual aid groups, and that is an absolutely beautiful example of solidarity that I have seen that I thought you might want to hear about. They work, my Arabic is not good, but I think it's pronounced Nafir, and in Sudan that it can be interpreted as one for all for one. So between the challenges that we've heard about and some of these human responses, it can feel pretty overwhelming. And that's part of what we want to think about today, because we think it's important to have that overwhelming community, so to be talking to other people around you and those you know about how you can respond together. So the next thing I'm going to do is talk a little bit about the militarism that I see around me. And then we're going to get you hopefully talking to each other about where you might see that militarism playing out. So I said that for new challenges, we are facing very familiar responses. And these responses are mostly militarized. And by that, I mean a way of understanding the world, a way of interacting with the world, which is based on fear and a very sometimes understandable desire to control a threat, usually through violence or the threat of violence. And this can be visible or very invisible violence. On that fear is based a whole economic and political system of armed control. Or maybe it's the other way around. Maybe that system of political and armed control causes fear. I think so. And a promotion of the idea that might is right. I want to remind us that lots of people benefit from the system the way that it is. There are lots of people who profit from war, arms companies, of course, but also there are links with fossil fuel companies and mining companies, etc. Lots of
and the Church of England.
And the Church of England. Thank you, John. We could talk about the Church Commissioner's investment in arms trade a little bit later.
Do that
perhaps
at the end.
Yeah. So I want to reiterate that this is a system which makes war and organised violence feel inevitable and necessary, and I want to say that that's not the case. I don't believe this is the way of Jesus, but the way that he challenged. John introduced yourself earlier by talking about Fellowship of Reconciliation, and I haven't said much about Quakers, but I'll say that for me, I came to Quakers because I felt like it was a place where a non-violent understanding of the gospel was played out. So that's why I'm here. So in Sheffield, and not only in Sheffield, but in Sheffield where I live, there are a number of ways that I see militarism playing about in my local community. Here are some of them. Maybe these are the same for you in your area. So there is a cadet base near me. There are lots and lots of posters on trams and buses at the moment, recruitment posters. You may have noticed the army does not ever meet its recruitment target, so it has to put in lots of money to try and increase the number of people joining. I saw lots of adverts in the World Cup for joining the military. It's exciting, so they say. I see lots of conversations with others who think militarized responses are the only ways to respond to current instability. A lot of my friends who are parents see lots of military recruitment visits to their kids' schools. And there are lots of armed police in train stations, especially when there is a football match on, which in Sheffield is a lot. And there is a constant conversation in the media about the need to increase military spending. These are some of the ideas I came up with. I wonder if you could speak to somebody else, either the same person or somebody different. We've got about 3 or 4 minutes for this, I think. And my question is, where do you see militarism or those militarized responses around you? It might be in movies, in politics, in the media, in computer games, if you're into that. It might be in education, your job. You might have some of the examples that I've used, and you might have others as well. Do you want to add any, John? No? Okay, great. Thank you. So I will do the hand sticky uppy thing in a few minutes, but if you could talk to your neighbour about where you see militarism playing out around you, that would be wonderful. Thank you so much. That was like a Mexican wave. We obviously haven't got time to hear from everybody, but it would be great to hear a few examples. And John is going to snappily put them into this grid, which has four headings: self, community, world, and faith. And I wish you luck in dividing these different examples. This friend lives next door to the atomic weapons establishment,
which is not too brilliant, and most of the people in the village work there. And I have a very close friend who invests his time in producing what I think are called microwave software, in which to direct missiles and drones and everything else.
Thank you. So this is the challenge of having friends and neighbours who work in military industries. Person behind you, had your hand up.
I live in Salisbury, so every time I drive almost anywhere, there are tanks, there are red flags on the days that there's operations. So if I speak to somebody, there is a good chance that their other half is employed in the military service. It's completely ingrained into the area I live.
Thank you. This is a really interesting thing about geography as well. So a friend from Salisbury Plain. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. VE Systems. Let's get them down.
Yeah.
Rachel.
In a village local to where I live, the British Legion for the month of November decided to commemorate and remember by making an almost full-scale model of a tank in the middle of the village green and festooning it with bunting. I wondered what message, and that was very divisive for the village.
That's really interesting. I'd love to talk to you about that later. So I'm going to repeat it in case anyone is needing the microphone. Somebody who has a full-stage tank with bunting on in the village for the whole month of November. We've got other ones to add, John. Did you want to suggest?
We'll take a few.
Yeah.
Padres. What? Yep.
Military chaplains, thank you. Thank you. Yeah, really good example. So we've got Lake and Heath in Suffolk, and also Armed Forces Day, which you haven't heard about. You will later. Yes, at the back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. So a friend lives in Sweden, and they all know their jobs if war comes, and there are lots of people signed up for the year that Swedish young people do. I think we have hundreds of examples in the room, but I think in order to move on, I'm going to say three more. John, is that all right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I have two teenage sons,
Thank you. So targets social media, specifically targeting young people and young boys. Yeah, yeah. Thank you. So the effects of war on veterans, we've got somebody who's met people with PTSD who have been in the military, and that's the effect it has on them. I can't remember where I got to, but I see two hands there, so we'll have both of those, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Thank you so much. Yes, the prevalence of militarism in gaming, I think, is an absolutely massive issue. We have touched the surface, but I'm really grateful to have made this start. John,
yeah, so I've split them up into various different areas, and it's good, if you don't mind me saying, to hear what you've shared, because when I did a workshop like this earlier this year, it was hearing parents talk about hearing their children talk in ways that they would never have done at that age about the threat of war and what they were going to do. That was one of the most moving things that helps move this idea of war from an assumption in the head to a matter of the heart, which is where some of our religious response begins to come. What is our heart leading us to? Thank you to those who live in and around military areas for sharing some of your experience. We know that a large industry, whatever the industry, has a lot of additional, I'll say, benefits in the local community economy-wise. But actually, if you take a step back and look at the overall figures, it is a sizable portion, but it is by no means a large employer around the UK, just in a few certain geographical areas. And so I would always encourage you, if you hear people talk about, you know, the number of jobs in mainly building weapons, actually, no, that's in a few places where it distorts the local economy. For the rest, it's a very small number. Thank you to our friend from Sweden. The Fellowship of Reconciliation has a sister branch in Sweden, imaginatively called SWEFOR, Swedish Fellowship of Reconciliation. And they've had a pretty challenging few years because they had been beneficiaries for a long time of grants from the Swedish government to do international development work and peace work. And after Putin decided to ignore the international laws and rolled his tanks, all of that work got shut down because the Swedish government pulled the plug on basically all of its peace funding and orientated its economy purely to facilitate war. And I think when we think about our international connections, it's as important to hear from countries like ours, as well as countries that may be living within war. Because, for example, it's been really interesting to hear stories from young people in Germany who are two stages down the line towards conscription, where there was a line put into a bill that nobody saw until after it had been passed, which said that if a young man of fighting age was to leave Germany for more than 3 months, they had to register with the German government to say that. And basically, when everyone spotted that, there was tens of thousands of young people out on the streets, huge protests, politicians got outraged, and I think it got changed. But, you know, we can take heart from how some people are responding, as well as feeling challenged and upset. You know, I don't know how you felt when you discovered your children were targeted on social media by military adverts, but that's breaking down your ability as a parent to decide, in a way, some of what your child sees and how they learn about things. So there's all sorts of different things that come up, which was why I wanted us to turn to the Bible, because it's really quite easy at times to get caught up in the moment. And it's important that whatever we do to respond, bring our whispers of peace, have some scriptural shape to them. So I'm very grateful to our two folks at the front, who not only sat at the front in a religious gathering, but are happy to read. I mean, whew, they say Greenbelt breaks all the rules. Do you want to read us your share your name? And
so my name is Konstantin. This is Luke chapter 14, verses 34 to 35. Salt is good. But if salt has lost its taste, how can its saltiness be restored? Mm-hmm. It is useful neither for the soil nor for the manure pile. They throw it away. If you have ears to hear, then hear.
Okay. And then we've got one other passage. Again, if you don't mind sharing your name.
Hello, I'm Elliot. I sound so English being here. I'm used to being in Scotland. So this is 1 Corinthians chapter 13, which is usually the wedding reading. If I speak in the tongues of humans and of angels, but do not have love, I am a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. And if I have prophetic powers and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have all faith so as to remove mountains, but do not have love, I am nothing. If I give away all my possessions, and if I hand over my body so that I may boast, but I do not have love, I gain nothing. Do you want the rest of it?
No, that's fine. Thank you. The first, a description of the use of salt to bring out the flavours, and then how sometimes it can become empty and not have that ability. The second, that beautiful bit where if we don't have love in our heart, we're just noise. And if we think about particularly well-meaning conversations about issues of conflict and division, someone will go, oh, well, you know, it's not very good having a protest. That's just noise. But if we see all of this going on around us, actually we do want to sometimes stand up and make a noise to protest. Or we want to engage in conversations that reach out across the divide and bring new people in. And so what I'd like us to instead think about is think of that biblical use of salt, of bringing out the flavours. And the flavours that we're called to bring out are the flavours of God's love. A love and a peace that at times can sometimes say, no, stop. But at other times can instead redirect people to look somewhere different. Let's think, for example, about the place of young people. So I think we have nearly 1 million young people unemployed in the UK at the moment, or not in education, NEET, I think is the horrid phrase. And various people at different times think, what do we do? And usually, stereotypically, across the old colonel, who may or may not have links to the arms trade, will appear in the media and say, what we need is conscription back. And people who often haven't been involved in the military, or certainly were not involved in conscription, will go, yes, it will give the young people discipline, focus, purpose, and just what they need. Now, there are many different ways to respond. There is a petition at the back. We'll come back to that. But what might love in our situation be calling us to do? Think about, first of all, what are the opportunities for young people in your local area? Who provides them? Because basically, the only time young people are offered to be up as cannon fodder trainees is when no one else is offering opportunities for young people in that area. And Quakers in Scotland did some brilliant research a few years ago which showed the military targets, particularly low economic areas, to really push the military, never quite saying, you ain't got a hope, but here's an opportunity. Now think about your own church and its networks. How many of your churches still do youth work of some description? Now if we feel our faith and following Jesus, who resisted the largest military empire by saying, put down your sword, well, we can't just shake our head and go, oh no, we don't like the sound of conscription. Actually, we have a resource there in front of us. We have our church buildings. We have our church communities. We have a space to offer friendship, community, training, and life for young people. We can help bring out those flavors. But sometimes we do feel a bit tired. We've been trying to do all the good, but actually sometimes we do also need to go out and protest, because otherwise we might feel tired. And the joy and challenge of protest is because you're meeting like-minded people and reminding yourself you are not alone in what you are standing for. Because it can feel lonely being a person of peace. How many people, put your hand up here if you chat to your neighbours all the time about why peace is important. Yep, good, thank you. Put your hand up if you would feel uncomfortable talking about peace at the moment. Okay. I mean, the good news is, and maybe it's just because I'm also quite socially awkward, that we've got a whole load of people going, I'm uncomfortable talking about peace, but I've come and sat in a workshop with about 50 other people to talk about peace. But that's basically what a demonstration is, or a vigil. It's putting a marker in the sand to say, actually, in this moment, with the news that I see and hear, here I stand, and here is who is standing with me. And it may be like 10, 12 people, like the women in black who stand around the Edith Cavell statue every month in London with placards highlighting different protests. Or it may be tens of thousands filling a street once. But I think it's important to think through, okay, if we're responding to these challenges, we have two different ways of going. We can be saying stop. We can be demonstrating an alternative. But we must have love at the heart. Otherwise, it will be a shallow response that won't actually let people really work through what they can do. So get back in the groups you're chatting about to do with your what you're seeing around you. And just have a think together about how you might begin to respond to some of what you had shared before. Okay.
Let's do our hands up.
So let's hear some of the whispers, but possibly a bit louder so I can hear you over the band behind, of what you've been sharing. And we'll hear between us some of the different ideas that have been emerging. So has anyone got any things that they've been talking about that they'd like to share? Yes. Hey.
So we were talking about how violence is something that needs to be learned.
Mm-hmm.
How you might start teaching about violence in children.
Mm-hmm.
And how that might grow over time. That's kind of what we're saying, but like, it's a skill. It's a
yes.
Trained. And I was talking about being part of the New Party Group generation when I was, where I was 11, when the New Party Group was signed. Which meant that we spent a lot of our teenage years being taught how to do those community stuff by our churches. And
yeah.
I mean, it did create a generation, I think. You're now in the 30s and 40s of people who were teenagers who were around at the time who were taught a lot of violence as children. And some of us have forgotten it, but I do think that the training there and the work that we're in the community has been incredibly helpful. And it's a way of, you know, we've got a little bit more in the new try to. Kids in churches that were trying to teach non-violence were then having pressure on the shoulders as they went up to the box.
So the good news is organisations like the Fellowship of Reconciliation, which is very happy to take donations as well as membership, believes passionately in non-violence, as do the Quakers. And they've both in different ways been working in schools and other spaces to teach both mediation and non-violence. So in the West Midlands, there's an amazing Quaker Peacemakers project, which trains up all these little mediators who go around in like little seven-year-olds in bibs. It's very sweet. And broader work alongside that. I did some teaching with Anglesey Brook Museum of Primitive Methodism, which is a great history of conscientious objection in some local schools. And it was really beautiful because one week we taught a short exercise about how to diffuse an argument, and 4 year sevens came back the next week unprompted and said, oh, I used that last week, and told us all about it. And I nearly cried. So you're absolutely right. It's about bringing out those flavors of saying, here's the alternative. Thank you. Yes.
Rather than military service setting up absolute programs of eco-action, allowing young people to sign up for a year or something like that in a well-funded initiative that is a boon. Yeah.
So build an alternative, give alternative gap years. You've spoken about climate change. Those of you who heard me last year know that 5% of global carbon emissions come from war. So war kills us twice, once when the bullets are fired and once when we feel the impact of climate change. And that's before you look at the impact of rebuilding afterwards. Sister organizations to the fellowship in, for example, Austria, offer that alternative service model where conscription is in place. However, it's always worth remembering the moment war breaks out, all of the alternatives are disallowed. And so part of our longer term advocacy is standing up for conscientious objectors in Russia and Ukraine who are having their legal right to say, my faith says thou shalt not kill. You are not going to tell me part of that. So thank you for reminding us of the importance of alternative service. Yes.
We could spend a tiny fraction of the amount that nearly every denomination has spent on talking about human sexuality, talking about pacifism or just war or anything at all, because we just don't talk about it. And we were saying, I feel, the reason I put my hand up about feeling nervous about talking about peace is because certainly from last year, it seems to have become common sense that we have to spend more on defence. And I don't feel well equipped to speak to those people who are completely convinced.
Thank you. So there are two parts to that. One is, what is your church talking about? How long for? And is it the right things? Rachel spoke about human sexuality, which within the tradition we're both part of, the Methodist Church, it spent about 20 years having first talked about it, workshopping it and all the rest. And I think the closest it's come to discussing war and military spending was when the military chaplains turned up and said to us that our theology of peace was too much about the world as it should be and not enough about the world as it is. Now, I think that's a really fascinating theological sentence within itself. And then I remember that the military chaplains are actually line managed by the Ministry of Defence. And so when I see other lines in their reports talking about the end of the peace dividend, using exactly the same language that we see in the Defence and Security Review, I get quite angry, because I feel that actually the spiritual role of the chaplain to bring God's love even amid some of the grim goings on of war is vital. But the provision of that shouldn't then allow a back door for just assuming war is okay. And as we heard earlier, when people were talking about the tank in the village, for example, the church is nervous because it feels it'll lose its social power. Sorry, that's one of my hot button topics and you didn't quite realize it. Thankfully, I work for an organization called the Fellowship of Reconciliation. Others are available. Yes.
We can get overly hung up on what the church is, and we automatically think there has to be a Christian solution to this. We've got probably the biggest peace organisation that has ever existed in Scotland, Palestinian Solidarity. We talk about salt earlier. As Christians, instead of thinking we can do everything within our churches, important as though that is, to actually get out of our churches and get involved in some of these other organisations as well. And we have to form coalitions. We won't necessarily agree with everybody on every single item,
yeah.
But if the overall emphasis is towards peace and non-violence, we have an important voice.
Absolutely. So it's said that non-violence and love is a golden thread within at least the Abrahamic faiths. And looking beyond, I'm a bit more wobbly on, so I'm not going to dare commit. I don't know, Hannah, if you know more broadly on the place of peace and non-violence in non-Abrahamic faiths.
I do, but probably not for the next 30 seconds.
Not for the next 30. Okay, but it exists. And it's important to use our in the church knowledge and training so that we can then go and meet with others comfortable in what we think and believe to then find that common cause and build a bigger picture. I had a great time last year, I think it was, going to alternative cedar meal put on by the local Nomad movement, which are a very powerful anti-war in Gaza Jewish group. which cover a wide spectrum of Jewish beliefs within it. And we've been trying to make sort of institutional friends with them as well so we can find the space. But we have found it's important to know our voice within that. Thank you, Lee. I'm going to take one more. Has anyone sat there with a question or are they stuck? Or, yes, go for it.
We were talking about the military targeting young people in deprived areas.
Yeah.
And around the corner from where I live, there's a gym,
mm-hmm.
an Olympia gym on Rutland Road. And they run an art school club, and it's about targeting young people who might hit into knife crime. And they were doing a crowdfunding of their branch run out. And I was just thinking about trying to get community to commit to regular small giving so that they don't then panic in another 6 months' time.
Yeah.
Because that's about supporting those people and giving them choices and not having to reinvent the wheel.
Absolutely, a great story about community hopefully saving a youth provision to provide an alternative in an area which would be quite high on the military recruitment space. So thank you for sharing. So I hope through the group conversations and some of what we've shared, I've sort of talked back in response so that you felt we were earning our keep here, not just you in the room. But we've begun to think together about how we do both have the ideas, the skills, and the spiritual heart to begin to demonstrate a difference. I do also know that people still like to be, I wouldn't quite say told what to do. So we have got a few examples we have prepared earlier. So, I meant to start. Okay, so the first thing I'd like to highlight is prayer is incredibly important, not just personal, but ensuring there are spaces for collective prayer to name and reflect on places of conflict. And as a fellowship, since the war in Ukraine started, we have met online at 7:30 on a Friday, and we have met every week, and we will meet until the war ends, when we'll meet one more time to give thanks for peace and to pray for lasting reconciliation. In those 30 minutes, we have had speakers from Ukraine, we've had speakers from the Middle East, we've had speakers from America, we've got between about 30 and 80 people attending a mailing list now of nearly 400 people around the world. And whether you come once, you come weekly, you come occasionally, anyone who comes will always share afterwards how important and uplifting just that 30 minutes to focus on the situations in the world and to pray for peace helps them. And the speakers we have, who might be religious and sometimes not, always say how special it was to be felt upheld in that moment. So it's both a stop, because quite often we're saying we wish the war would stop, but it's also showing the alternative, because we're giving space to hear people who are doing others, and it's all held in love.
On the 19th of September in London, there is going to be a silent vigil walking for peace around the city. This is organised by Quakers, but open to all. And one of the things that will distinguish it from other protest demonstrations is that there will not be any chanting or any banners. As much as I like chanting and banners, they wanted to do something different. If you're available, please come along. Anyone can join. And there will be lots of like satellite similar walking vigils around the country. I bought a paltry 6 leaflets. So if you get there and there's none left, please just take a photo and leave one for other people. Thank you.
It's been really good to hear people share about the importance of faith-based education. And the Fellowship of Reconciliation are beginning to develop a church peace network, which we're hoping will be a network of churches around for us, England and Scotland. If you live in Wales, our dear friends, Cymdeithas and Cwmod are your folks to go to. If you're in Sweden, it's Swefor. We've got sister branches all around the world. But our peace church network is going to be churches who want to take 3 to 4 distinct actions to help build a culture of peace. And so at this point, we're looking for people who want to help us develop it and try it out. So at the Greenbelt stall, we have a very brief 3-minute survey, which is sort of agree, disagree, where we're trying to find out how your church does and doesn't help you explore a life of peace, and then gives you a chance to sign up. So do go to the takeaway and fill that out. You'll be unsurprised to hear an initial shift shows more interest in peace than the church is enabling, but we need to get some more answers, because also it gives you types of ways of responding, so we can help ensure things like a non-violence education course could emerge. And finally, the Quakers and Fellowship of Reconciliation, Peace Pledge Union, Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, all sorts of religious and secular groups get together every year on the 15th of May, I think it is, to remember conscientious objectors. And as the government began to talk more and more, including my own MP, I had a very fascinating public conversation with him where he stood up and said, "This is the opportunity." I stood up and said, "No, it's not," to potentially reintroduce conscription. We've brought out a petition which we're going to hand in next year on International Conscientious Objectors Day to say the government should not compel anyone to join the military. And so if you feel you want to just sign something to say that, we have a short petition at the back and more copies at the Fellowship of Reconciliation stand. So...
not quite finally, John.
Ooh!
two things I wanted to share. One is also at the back, there is a leaflet about how to resist military presence in schools. Please take that away if you would like to. And a leaflet on how to run a walking tour in your area, which is based on the history of conscientious objectors. So there's a kind of guide to how to do that. And finally, I wanted to share a fun fact, which you maybe think about earlier. If you want to see where this comes from, if you just look up the Transition Security Project and their report, Buying the Dip. The Dip is the Defence Investment Plan. You've cast your mind back to maybe 6 weeks, and that was full of the news. This is just before John Healey resigned. Okay, we're all there. The Defence Investment Plan was touted as creating more jobs. In fact, because of the money that will take away from other areas, it's going to lose 20,000 jobs for this country. So there's a fun fact to leave you with. And I know that, John, you wanted to finish with a song.
So we are going to finish with a song as an act of prayer and a calling for peace. However, would anyone object if we took a photograph of us all with you all so that we can share we've had a beautiful conversation about peace? No? Right, okay. Hang on. Hannah, come here. This is probably not going to work, but let's get it done. And then we're going to sing an Iona song called Peace, Salam, Shalom, in which there will also be a chance. Nice. Okay, so Hannah, can you hold that up? Right, okay. Now, the good thing is the word peace moves your mouth. So on the count of three, if you all say peace, we'll all look really cheery. One, two, three.
Peace.
Great.
Your face is so big.
That then shows the rest of the world that people care about peace, which is good. So we're going to share as a closing song, but also prayer for peace in ourselves, in our community, and in the world, the hymn Peace, Salam, Shalom, which picks up the word peace in three of the Abrahamic faiths. And I last sang this on the shore of Iona when we were doing a peace week there. As a vigil for the people of Gaza. And I remember some people saying they didn't feel comfortable singing this and protesting for Gaza at home for all sorts of reasons. But to find a space they could, they suddenly felt they'd had their moment. So whether you've sung it before, protested before, or this is the first time you've just paused, this is going to be our moment. Does anyone here know it? Great. So I can teach it to you without... I was really glad Alison Adam was no longer on the bookstall, because she used to run an amazing Wee Sing in London. And I feared... So I did invite her, but she was off. So the words are peace, salam, shalom. So peace. Okay, so let's see. Peace, salam, shalom. Peace, salam, shalom. Peace, salam, shalom.
Peace, salam, shalom.
Peace, salam, shalom. That's it. We'll try and sing it all the way through, because it feels you've got enough. We can begin to move meditatively. So, peace, salam, shalom. Peace, salam, shalom. Peace, salam, shalom. Peace, salam, shalom. One more time. Peace, salam, shalom. Peace, salam, shalom. Peace, salam, shalom. Peace, salam, shalom.
We pray for Gaza, peace, salam, shalom. Peace, salam, shalom. We make quicker. Peace, salam, shalom. Peace, salam, shalom. We pray for Sudan. Peace, salam, shalom. Peace, salam, shalom. Peace, salam, shalom. Where else? Where should we pray for? We pray for Ukraine, peace, salam, shalom. Peace, salam, shalom. Peace, salam, shalom. Peace, salam, shalom. We pray for refugees in Britain hiding in hotels. Peace, salam, shalom. Peace, salam, shalom. Peace, salam, shalom. Peace, salam, shalom. And finally, we pray for ourselves. Peace, salam, shalom. Peace, salam, shalom. Peace, salam, shalom. Peace, salam, shalom. Go in peace, friends. Thank you so much, Hannah.
Thanks so much for listening to this recorded talk. Explore our full Greenbelt Festival Talks archive with almost 20 years of recorded talks and podcasts for free at greenbelt.org.uk/talks.